So, morning again. Easter is coming up. It's April 20th. The story of Easter resonates with us because it's our story. We know how it feels to be crucified. We know how it feels to be trapped in a dark tomb. We know how it feels to walk back out into the light, ready to live anew. And it's the same with the characters around Jesus. We know these people. They are like us or someone we know, so we tell their stories over and over and over again. The book of John does an especially good job developing characters that reflect different levels of consciousness, which is useful for unity since that's how we interpret the whole Bible. Every person, place, or thing in the Bible represents some aspect of your individual consciousness. It's a very personal way to approach the Bible, and it makes it different for everyone. But some of these Bible characters seem to represent universal states of mind. So I want to look at three of them today in the context of Easter. Judas, who ultimately betrayed Jesus, Peter, who was Jesus' right-hand man, and the mysterious person in the book of John who was only called the disciple Jesus loved. I talked about the book of John in October, did a series based on John Shelby Spong's new book called The Fourth Gospel. And I said then I would come back to it at Easter, because about half the book of John is focused on the last week of Jesus' life. So, quick review. John was written about 100 AD, decades after Jesus lived. It's the last of the four Gospels to have been written, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It had multiple authors. It seems to have been a community of mystical Jews who put it together. Mysticism is oneness. It is direct knowing of God within and God as a permeating presence in the world. So in John, we see these mystics fleshing out their understanding of God and how Jesus was a part of it. For them, Jesus represented God by revealing the divine in all people. He spoke with the voice of God. He invited everyone, not just Jews, into a new consciousness, a new life. He said life could be better than they'd ever known. They could experience themselves as part of God and God as part of them. I am the vine, you are the branches. We talked about Jesus' I am statements. I am the door. I am the way, the truth, and the life. He was speaking as the Christ, the divine energy that is in each of us. The I am of your being is the divine in you. And that is the door. It is the way. He also said, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. The light and dark motif is throughout the book of John. What we see in these characters is that some were able to walk into the light. They were willing to risk this invitation to new life. And some weren't. They dug their heels into the life they had. So let's start with Judas Iscariot. He turned his back on the light. And in John's story, he is a symbol of all who do that. The writers of John believed anyone who couldn't accept Jesus was choosing darkness, including and especially the Jews who did not believe Jesus was the Messiah. They kicked the Jesus followers out of the synagogue. That split between traditional Jews and the Jesus followers, who were not yet called Christians, they were a sect of Judaism. That split is the key to understanding the book of John, because that's what was going on when this was written. The name Iscariot derives from a word meaning political assassin. The name Judas is even less subtle. It's the Jewish nation. Judah, Judea, Judas, all the same. A great deal of anti-Semitism has been justified using the book of John, which is too bad because the villainous Jews in John are only those hierarchical leaders who would not accept the Jesus followers. But Judas had the same name as the persecutors of the Jesus followers. If you really know your Bible, you will see in Judas kind of a composite of traders from the Old Testament. There's an Old Testament story that talks about 30 pieces of silver. There's an Old Testament story that talks about a traitor who hanged himself. Both of those stories ended up attached to Judas in the book of Matthew. In John, we don't find out what happened to Judas, but earlier on, he's portrayed as just a generally unpleasant person. When Jesus' friend Mary, of Mary and Martha, was anointing Jesus' feet with nard, the expensive perfume, in John, it's Judas who objects to that, who says, she should just sell that perfume and give the money to the poor. John is the only gospel in which Jesus identifies Judas as the traitor ahead of time. It happens at the Last Supper. And all three of these guys are in this passage. Jesus was troubled in spirit and declared, very truly I tell you, one of you will betray me. The disciples looked at one another, uncertain of whom he was speaking. One of his disciples, the one whom Jesus loved, was reclining next to him. Simon Peter, therefore, motioned him to ask Jesus to whom he was speaking, of whom he was speaking. So while reclining next to Jesus, he asked him, Lord, who is it? Jesus answered, it is the one to whom I give this piece of bread when I have dipped it in the dish. So when he had dipped the piece of bread, he gave it to Judas, son of Simon Iscariot. After Judas received the piece of bread, Satan entered into him. And Jesus said to him, do quickly what you're going to do. So Judas immediately went out, and it was night, into the darkness, into the night. You remember the opening lines of the book of John describing this energy of the divine that took form in Jesus? What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. Judas is a symbol of all those who prefer death and darkness to light and life. He can't make the transition. He won't enter into the Christ experience. When Judas brings the Roman soldiers, the chief priests, and the Pharisees to the garden where Jesus is praying, they're carrying torches and lanterns. So they push back the darkness enough that Jesus stands in the light. And Jesus walks right up to them and says, whom do you seek? And they say, Jesus of Nazareth. And he says, I am. Now, if you look it up, your translation will say, I am he, because the translators assumed he meant, yes, it's me, I'm the guy you're looking for. But the original Greek is just, I am. He is claiming his divinity right in their faces. And, the story says, the arresting party drew back and fell to the ground. Now, when I say Judas is a part of your consciousness, I'm not saying you're all traitors. But see if this sounds familiar. Have you ever become part of something, a group, a way of thinking, and then you decide it's not for you after all? You've given a lot and they want more. Maybe they seem woo-woo. Maybe you thought this group was going to bring about great change and that's just not happening. Maybe the situation even has become dangerous. So you break with them. You go back to your life. That's what Judas did. Now, betraying Jesus to the authorities reflects his personality, his character. But deciding that he couldn't make the shift to the life Jesus offered, that's where I think a lot of us might identify with him. Part of our consciousness balks at change. When Judas brought the soldiers to the garden, Jesus asked the Romans to let the rest of his disciples go. And they did, but Peter wouldn't leave. He drew his sword and cut off the ear of the high priest's slave. And Jesus said, now, we're not going to do things that way. It's just one of many times my heart goes out to Peter. He's just so human. I mean, wouldn't you want to defend your teacher and friend if he were being arrested? Peter is every man. He works hard to accept the light offered by Jesus, but he wavers back and forth. You remember, he's the one who got out of the boat and tried to walk on water with Jesus, and he did for a minute until his fear overtook him. His name was Simon. Jesus nicknamed him Peter, the Rock, which really was more of an affirmation of what he would become, because at the time he was kind of a windsock. But Peter represents our own struggle to accept our divinity and our oneness. At the Last Supper, Jesus got a towel and started to wash his disciples' feet. Their feet were filthy. You know, they walked in sandals all over that dusty country. And washing someone's feet was a lowly act. That's what slaves did for their masters. So Peter was terribly uncomfortable with Jesus doing this. When Jesus came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" And Jesus answered, "You do not know now what I'm doing, but later you will understand." Peter said, "You'll never wash my feet." And Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no share with me." So Simon Peter said to him, "Then, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." When he got it, he got it. He was all in. He understood this was a blessing from Jesus. It was a tender act. And Jesus knew it was goodbye. But that same night, Peter waffled again. He had a moment of awareness with the feet. Then later he cut off the ear of the slave. He had the courage to go with Jesus to the high court and then stood outside and denied knowing him. Three times. Even on Easter morning, Peter was confused. Mary Magdalene was first at the tomb. She went back and told the others. Peter and the disciple whom Jesus loved ran to the tomb. And Peter barged right into the empty cave, saw the burial cloths, didn't understand what had happened. He did not immediately think resurrection, which is understandable. But the disciple whom Jesus loved stopped at the entrance to the tomb and just looked inside. Burial cloths folded neatly, no body. And the book of John says, he believed. Who is this guy? The disciple whom Jesus loved. Flashback. Jesus had friends who lived in Bethany, four miles outside of Jerusalem, which was just a walk for them. It was the sisters, Mary and Martha, and their brother, Lazarus. Jesus was at their house often. It was probably as close to a home as he had. I talked about Lazarus. I did a whole series on Lazarus. Can you believe it's been more than 2 years ago? But I won't go into a lot of detail except to say raising Lazarus from the dead is pivotal to the Easter story in John because it was so spectacular and it convinced so many people that Jesus was the real deal that the authorities became threatened. And decided at that point, Jesus had to go. It was after Lazarus, they were determined to find a reason to arrest him. So just remember this snapshot. Jesus is standing outside Lazarus' tomb. Lazarus has been dead 4 days. All hope is gone. And Jesus wept. And the crowd said, "See how Jesus loved him." The disciple whom Jesus loved, Lazarus. He came back to life. Why wouldn't he travel with Jesus after that? This disciple is only mentioned in John and not until the Last Supper, but he has joined them by then. He's the one leaning against Jesus. He's the one Peter has to ask to find out what Jesus meant about a traitor in their midst. He is clearly top dog, even above Peter now. And through the rest of the story, there's some tension between Peter and the disciple Jesus loved. Peter struggles for understanding, while the beloved disciple is just calmly on top of everything. Why wouldn't that disciple be Lazarus? He has walked into new life. He was able to accept the Christ consciousness Jesus offered. He was at the foot of the cross with Mother Mary. He arrived at the tomb Easter morning, even before Peter. He just didn't go in. He only had to see the burial cloths. Because remember, When Lazarus came out of his tomb, he was still bound in the burial cloth. And Jesus told the crowd, loose him, let him go, unbind him. He was still in human form. But Lazarus saw Jesus' burial cloth left behind and nobody in the tomb, and he knew. Lazarus, of all people, knew there was life after death. This beloved disciple symbolizes those who are transformed, born of spirit, who share the new life and the new awareness Jesus brought. Lazarus is that part of our consciousness that understands who we truly are. He is awake, he is enlightened, and that is a part of each of us. It's our awareness that we are eternal beings. Peter is our struggle to believe it and to know what to do with our divine power. The beloved disciple is living from divine consciousness as Jesus did, and as Jesus said, we all can. There's an epilogue to the book of John, clearly written by someone else and added later, but I love this story. The disciples have gone back to Galilee. In fact, Peter was the first to say, after all this hoopla about crucifixion and resurrection, Peter's the one who says, well, back to fishing, got to make a living. So they're out fishing one morning, and there's this man on the beach. And the disciple Jesus loved, who's on the boat with them, says, it is the Lord. And Peter goes berserk. He jumps into the lake. He swims to shore about 100 yards. And the boat comes in with the other guys. And Jesus grilled some of their fresh fish over a fire and broke bread. There's loaves and fishes again. And then he and Peter had a little chat in which Jesus handed the ministry over to him. Jesus asked three times, Peter, do you love me? And Peter answered, yes, Lord, of course I love you. And Jesus said, then feed my sheep. Peter got to make up for denying Jesus three times. And Jesus gave Peter his mission for the rest of his life. Peter did indeed become the head of the early church. He was a rock. After that, his faith did not waver. He understood now. Catholics later claimed Peter as the first pope. The tradition is that he went to Rome and was crucified there. The Bible doesn't say what happened to him. But when you see statues of Peter, including at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, the Church of the Vatican, named for him, he's holding keys. Jesus gave him the keys to the kingdom. Like Lazarus, Peter was finally able to step into the meaning of eternity. Judas couldn't do it. Peter struggled with it. Lazarus made the transition into the light. He took on new life. So which will it be for you if each of these is a part of your consciousness? I believe you get to choose. Let's take these thoughts into meditation. To meditate, we simply relax, become comfortable. You might want to close your eyes. You might take a deep breath or two, just to set aside anything else that's on your mind. And turn within to that place where peace passes understanding. There is a part of you, on good days and bad, that always knows you are divine. You are God expressing on the earth. You are the universe experiencing itself. And you have power you have not yet imagined or tapped. So the first choice to make is whether to try to live in divine consciousness. It is offered to all of us because it is hardwired into us. But we choose to walk into the light or turn away into the dark. Choosing the light and still being human probably means we will not do this perfectly. We will have days when we feel the fullness of our connection with the divine, and other days when it's hard to believe. But in the end, you may become the rock. You may live in the light. Live from your divine consciousness even while you are still a human being. Jesus showed us what it looked like. And even he seemed to have good days and bad. But when we meditate, we make contact with that part of us that knows the truth of our being. That you are divine. That you live in the light unless you shut it out. That you are never alone. And that the consciousness of God is available to you. All the attributes and all the power of the divine are something you can use in your human experience. And so we are grateful. Grateful for this awareness. Grateful for this human journey. Grateful for our spiritual growth. And so it is. Amen.